Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
You never expect your past to come back with a whisper, especially not when you've worked so hard to bury it. Beneath mortgages, milestones, and the weight of raising a child alone. But what happens when the past doesn't stay where you left it? When it stirs, quietly at first, with something as simple as a strange feeling in your gut, and then reveals itself in ways no one could have prepared for? Tonight's story takes us into the life of a woman who rebuilt herself from the ground up, alone, exhausted, but proud. She had no reason to think about the man who once walked away from her and their daughter, until the day she felt like she might collapse for no reason at all, a day when time and reality seemed to blur, a day she would later find that someone close to her had died. Was it grief, subconscious echo, or was something else making itself known? This isn't just a story about loss or forgiveness, though both make an appearance. It's a story about strange coincidences, disturbing phenomena, and a mother's belief that the dead don't always stay silent. And, as you'll soon hear, what began as a vague unease slowly unraveled into an encounter that blurred the line between memory and haunting. Let's get to the letter. They write, "Tony, I've never written to anyone about this, not like this, but after listening to your show, I felt maybe it was time. Not because I'm looking for answers exactly. I think deep down, I know there aren't any. At least none that makes sense in this world. But I need to tell someone what happened. Someone who might understand that not all hauntings come with cold winds or flickering lights. Some start with a feeling deep in your bones like a thread pulling from the other side. Back in 2008, things were finally turning around. I'd worked myself into the ground for years, sometimes three jobs at once, sometimes none. But that year I landed two solid positions. One was temporary, but the other, it was real, permanent, good pay. For the first time in a long time, I felt like I could exhale. My kids were getting older, my middle daughter's health was stable, and we were safe. I had a home, I had a car. I had something that resembled peace, and I wanted to mark it. It was nothing extravagant. Just a little celebration with my mom. She lives with us, has for years. She's been my anchor since the divorce, and after her breast cancer diagnosis, I wanted every moment to count. That night, we put on old records, had a laugh, and I let myself have a drink. Maybe two. I'm usually a teetotaler, but for once, I let my guard down. The next morning, though, something was off. It wasn't a hangover. I know what that feels like. This was different. My whole body felt like it was sinking, like gravity had doubled, and every step took more effort than it should. My stomach was churning, my hands trembling. I kept thinking, this can't be from one drink. This isn't normal. But I pushed through. I had promised to pick up supplies from the community center for someone. I can't even remember who now. It was a side gig, a few extra quid. I couldn't afford to say no. My nephew came with me, thank God. The moment we walked in, the woman at the desk looked at me like I was about to pass out. She offered me water, told me I should go home. I remember gripping the edge of the counter just to stay upright. But I wouldn't leave. I told myself I was fine. I needed to be fine. I got through the errand, got back home, and by the next day I felt better. But something had changed. That was the day I learned Gavin had died. We hadn't spoken in years. We parted badly, messy, emotional, both too stubborn for our own good. He was the father of my middle daughter. She was born on Mother's Day, which always felt like some kind of cruel joke. The only contact I had with him after she was born was through court letters about child support. He moved on, got with someone new, and from what I understood, was never allowed to be involved in our daughter's life. She grew up not knowing him, not really. I used to get so angry about that, but eventually I just stopped. But that morning, when I couldn't move, couldn't think. That was when he slipped away. A brain hemorrhage, sudden, no warning. He collapsed, and within a day or two, the doctors told his family there was no coming back. Life support was turned off sometime around when I was at the community center, struggling to breathe. He was only 43. And just like that, he was gone. My daughter, our daughter, was shattered. She was only 12, barely that. And even though she didn't really know him, his death cracked something in her. I think she always held out hope he'd come around someday. That maybe when she was older, she'd get a letter or a phone call. But that door closed forever, and it left her adrift. His family, who lived just across the road, by the way, did something that caught me off guard. They came to see her often. They sat with her, cried with her. They didn't speak to me much, but they treated her like one of their own. I was grateful, even if it was all too little, too late. Then, one Sunday morning, something odd happened. My eldest daughter, not Gavin's, mind you, was in the kitchen. She was chatting about Gavin's dad just telling a story when, out of nowhere, a potato hit her. A potato from the countertop. She looked around, thinking one of us had thrown it, but no one had. She didn't say anything at first. Maybe she thought she imagined it. But an hour later, when I walked into the same kitchen, a fridge magnet flew off the side and hit me square in the back. I stormed into the living room thinking someone was playing games, but everyone, my mom, my kids, were sitting quietly, watching TV. No one had moved. That was when my eldest finally spoke up, told me about the potato. We stared at each other, both realizing this wasn't a prank. We'd both experienced the same thing. Something thrown, not dropped, thrown. That was when I started to think about the timing. That sick, heavy feeling. The sensation like something was weighing me down. It wasn't just physical. It was like a tether had been yanked. And now I knew exactly when Gavin died. I knew the hour, the minute, and it was when I felt it. That can't be coincidence. It wasn't the first time either. Years ago, when a dear friend passed unexpectedly, I felt it too. That same hollow, collapsing sensation. But here's the strange part, Tony. I've lost other people. People closer to me. And I never felt anything. Why him? After Gavin's death, the house didn't go back to normal. If anything, things got louder. Not in the way people might think. No screaming voices or slamming doors. It was subtle at first, lights dimming when no one touched the switch, cold spots lingering in the hallway even with the heat on, cupboard doors I knew I closed somehow gaping open when I turned around again. I chalked it up to stress, to grief, to maybe losing a bit of grip on things, but it wasn't just me. My middle daughter, Gavin's daughter, began to feel it too. She'd say things like, "Mom, the room feels weird," or, "Why is it so cold in here?" I'd pretend not to notice. I had to keep things normal for her. I couldn't let her think I was scared, even when I was. The strangest part? Didn't feel threatening. Not really. It didn't feel like something bad was in the house. It felt like someone was trying to get through. Someone who wasn't done. And then the dreams started. They weren't terrifying. If anything, they were confusing. Vivid, but hollow, like echoes. In one, I saw Gavin as I remembered him when we first met, 20-something, full of fire and stupid confidence. He didn't speak, but I could tell he was trying to. His mouth moved, but no sound came out. In another, he was in our old apartment, pacing, placing items around the room, items that didn't belong to him in life. He'd set something down, glance at me, then vanish. I'd wake up drenched in sweat, my chest tight like I'd run a marathon in my sleep. It kept happening, again and again. I didn't want to believe he was reaching out. That's the kind of thing you see in movies or read in magazines at the hairdresser's. But when the same magnet that hit me weeks earlier flew off the fridge again, this time with no one in the kitchen but me, I couldn't keep denying it. I whispered aloud one night in the dark of my bedroom, "Is that you?" The house creaked. Nothing more. I don't know if that was an answer, but it felt like one. I started keeping a journal, not because I thought it would help, just to keep track. I wrote down the dates of the dreams, the strange happenings, the feelings. I even tried to debunk it all. I checked wiring, heating vents, even got the landlord to inspect the roof when a small leak appeared. Everything came back clean, but the feeling in my bones never left. I couldn't stop thinking about that day. That exact moment, I felt sick, lightheaded, like I'd been hit by a wave of static. That was the minute Gavin slipped away. My mom thinks it was his soul passing through, that people with strong connections, emotional, psychic, call it what you will, can feel when someone they once loved is leaving. But that's what confuses me most, Tony. We weren't close. We were never friends after we broke up. We didn't speak. We hadn't made peace. So why me? Why not his parents across the road? Why not his partner or his siblings? Why did I feel it? Why did he come here? Maybe because we created life together. Maybe because deep down, despite everything, he needed to say sorry. And maybe I needed to say it too. That thought haunted me more than the flying objects in the dreams. The idea that some part of him couldn't rest until I forgave him. Or maybe until I asked for forgiveness myself, because truth be told, I wasn't perfect. I said things in anger I can't take back. I held on to bitterness for too long. Maybe he carried that with him, and maybe he came to lay it down. A few weeks after it all began, I stood alone in the kitchen. I whispered, not even sure who I was talking to, "I forgive you, and I'm sorry too." The room felt lighter after that. No wind, no sound, just a soft quiet. The kind that settles in your chest. After that, the activity stopped. The fridge magnet stayed in place. No more dreams. No more odd feelings in the hallway. My daughter even said she was sleeping better. I didn't tell her what I'd done. I didn't need to. Whatever it was, it had passed. But the part I still can't explain is this. Why have I never felt that kind of connection with anyone else? I've lost people far closer to me. My uncle, my grandmother, a friend I spoke with every day. But when they died, I felt sadness. Not a shift in the air, not a pull in my soul. What made this different? Maybe it's the unfinished business. Maybe it's the fact that we were both a little broken when we met and that never got fixed. Maybe souls do linger until they're seen. Or maybe some bonds, no matter how distant, cut deeper than we think. I still think about him sometimes, not with regret exactly, but with a strange kind of ache, like a song you forgot you loved, playing quietly in another room. Thank you for reading this, for letting me say it out loud, even if only once. Thanks for taking the time to read this, and I love listening. Elaine. We often assume hauntings are tied to places, to old houses, forgotten hospitals, abandoned churches, but sometimes what haunts us isn't the location. It's the connection. Elaine Harper's story isn't one of classic terror. There were no screams in the night, no blood on the walls. What she experienced was far more intimate, more unsettling in its subtlety. A weight in her chest, a potato thrown without warning, a silence that somehow spoke louder than words. This wasn't about revenge. It was about recognition, a moment shared between two souls at the edge of a final goodbye. Now, skeptics might point to grief-induced hallucinations or the psychosomatic impact of guilt. When someone dies, especially someone we shared history with, it's not unusual for the mind to reach, to fill in blanks, to crave resolution. Elaine was overworked, under pressure, dealing with a daughter's illness and the weight of her past. It would be easy to explain away the dreams and disturbances as emotional spillover, but if that were true, if it were just stress, why did it stop the moment she forgave him? Why, in that instant of whispered closure, did the air change? Psychologically, we know that suppressed guilt can manifest in vivid ways. But there's also an old belief, one passed down in many cultures, that the soul sometimes returns, not to scare, but to settle, to tie up what was left undone, to say what was never said. Elaine didn't ask for this visit. She didn't even want it. But something or someone felt compelled to cross that invisible line. Whether it was Gavin's spirit or Elaine's own conscience echoing into the quiet, we may never know. But perhaps hauntings aren't always about death. Sometimes they're about forgiveness, and maybe, just maybe, that's what sets the spirit free.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.